science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Indeed. Ellen, please tell us how to now spot cancer quickly.
Okay, well, this is a paper that has just been published in the journal Nature Communications, which means it should be pretty good, and published by a bunch of Australians. And what they have come up with is a very, very, well, potentially, let's say, a very, very quick, cheap and easy method for detecting cancer. And I guess currently, this is something that is quite fraught and sort of, you know, it takes time, et cetera, and it's not necessarily the cheapest thing to do. So, you know, for example, for breast cancer and stuff, you've got to do things, you know, biopsy, mammograms, all of those sorts of things. Or you've got to analyse for particular proteins in the blood, that sort of thing. So in order to determine whether you know, have got cancer in your body or not. So
a complicated process.
A complicated and generally not exactly quick, and, you know, utilizes equipment that is not cheap. So so what these Australian folk are trying to do is to develop something that can be done very, very easily and doesn't require all the big technology, etc., to be able to get a positive or negative test out of this.
And therefore cheaper also?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Which might sound ridiculous because the thing that they're using is gold to do this test. So you might think that
yeah.
Yeah.
Seems ironic.
But what they're using is gold nanoparticles. Silence.
Yes.
So gold nanoparticles.
Very, 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 very small particles of gold.
Right, yeah. Exactly, okay. So because they're very, 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 very small, then you don't need many of them to be able to do this.
And therefore not super expensive.
Indeed, yeah.
We're just being joined by Lisa in studio, everybody.
Hello.
So the way that this works, so what you need is some sort of marker on a cancer cell to be able to denote it as a cancer cell. And that's difficult because cancer is not one disease, it's a whole variety of different diseases that we lump under the one name. And so therefore, it's difficult to come up with something that's common to all of these particular diseases. And so how do we go about doing that? Well, these Australians have looked very closely at the genomes of cancer cells. They're looking for something in these genomes that is particular to cancer cells, okay? And doesn't occur in just normal cells. And what they found was that there are these things called methyl groups. Now, anybody who knows about chemistry will know what a methyl group is. Simply a carbon atom with three hydrogens attached to it. And what they found was that these methyl groups were clustered together in cancerous DNA, and that gave the Australians something to work with. So that was sort of a marker, as I said, for cancerous DNA that doesn't occur in the DNA in normal cells.
Right.
And so they sort of hypothesized that, okay, so maybe we could work with those and see if we can develop a method that will spot the presence of these methyl groups in these particular arrangements in DNA. And they succeeded in doing that, and the way that they succeeded was to take these gold nanoparticles, so these tiny, tiny, tiny particles of gold, okay, so 10 to the minus 9 meters, tiny, tiny things. And these are really, really cool if you've ever seen them, because they have beautiful colors, and the colors of them can depend on their concentrations and everything, and they can really sort of go the whole rainbow, etc. So you can get pretty much any color out of these that you want. But what they found was that when they took these gold nanoparticles at a particular concentration, they were a beautiful red color. And if they then put in cancerous DNA into the solution, the nanoparticles stayed this beautiful red color, but if they put normal cells in, they turned instantly blue.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And now you can see the cheapness and the utility and the speed at which this could potentially work. So,
and it said something like 10 minutes, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So this is potentially a 10-minute thing. So basically, you know, you get essentially, you know, it's as simple as getting a test tube, putting a couple of drops in and seeing if you get a color change, mm-hmm. which is quick, easy.
Astounding, really.
Relatively unambiguous. So they've got it down to about 90%, or up to, sorry, about 90% success rate in distinguishing between cancers.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. How long until every, GP or hospital can have this technology?
Well, that's the thing. It's a 90% success rate. Sounds really good, but you don't want to be one of those 10% false negatives,
okay.
Do you?
No.
You haven't got cancer. So, yes, they're going to continue. The other thing about this is that this can, it can tell you if you've got cancer, but it can't tell you where you've got cancer.
Okay. So you do still need to go through.
So think of this as sort of a pre-screening sort of thing, where you could do a very, very quick, simple test, and it'll say, yes, maybe you should go and get checked up more, or very probably no, you don't have it. And this all depends on things called a thing called circulating free DNA, which is DNA from the cancerous cells basically going all around your body. So you can pick this up basically in a blood test because it'll be circulating around your body. It sounds really, really, really clever, number one. Very, very quick, very, very easy, and could potentially revolutionise the whole cancer game, I guess. Mm. So,
well, it would at least... you'd have perhaps... I don't actually know the rate, though. How often do people go and get tested and then not have cancer? Is that something that we should be dealing with in terms of, like, this sort of technology would stop that, right? You'd have one more step before...
Yes, indeed, you would.
Before going into the larger kind of hospital process and tests, yep. And all of that.
And I think, something like prostate cancer, there's been some controversy about that, about the test that's used for prostate cancer and whether that is really, really good. What's the success rate on that apparently is not too crash hot, I think. So, a positive result may be a positive result, or it might not be a positive result at all. So I think the 90% success rate is pretty good at the moment. They've tested it on a variety of cancers. Obviously, there's a whole bunch out there that need to be done. But, I think in terms of starting off, I think, this sounds really, really promising. And I guess we'll see where this goes. But
brilliant.
Yeah. No, really, really good. The fact that it's been published means that it's probably been patented prior to publishing. And so, these people will certainly be really, really onto it. Mm. So this is a bunch of people at University of Queensland. So
very exciting.
Yeah, it's very nice. Very nice.
Second story, Voyager. This piece of kit's been floating around for 40 years now.
41 years this has been going.
It's a long time.
Yeah, old technology.
Around. Okay, yes. So think back 41 years. Well, you guys can't, but... Anyway, so if you think back 41 years to the computer technology that was present in 1977.
Or the lack of.
Indeed, yes. So... NASA, I guess, was in charge of all of that stuff. And remember, they'd sent people to the moon and everything using a computer that had way less power than your phone does now, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so in 1977, I guess the technology was not too crash hot either, but obviously it was state of the art at the time. And so NASA launched two probes, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, imaginatively named. And their job was to explore the big outer planets, so your Jupiters, your Saturns, your Neptunes, and Uranuses. And Voyager 2, which was launched before Voyager 1 for some funny reason, so it was
okay.
And its job was to go out to Uranus and Neptune, mm-hmm. and it took 12 years to get there. So it got to Neptune in 1989. If you look up on the web, you see these beautiful, beautiful blue photos of Neptune, just absolutely stunning. And then after that, away it went, and it kept on going and going and going and going. And the news is that last week it has finally got free of, well, it's now in interstellar space, okay? Meaning that it's in the space between the stars, as the name suggests. So it's broken free of a thing called the heliosphere. And the heliosphere is essentially, in simple terms, the sphere of influence of the sun. So the sun is busy shooting out sort of solar particles and stuff like that, as suns do. And last week, the week before, the instruments on Voyager 2 noticed a big drop in the number of solar particles that was picking up, mm-hmm. and this has continued and continued, and so the scientists are now saying that it's now in interstellar space. So wow. it's hoofing along at 55,000 kilometres an hour, which, if you do the calculation, is 15 kilometres a second.
That's quite a distance.
What?
Yeah, yeah, that's quick.
How is it still is it still sending information?
Yeah.
Is it still
Yes, it is because we know that
where it is
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, and
but
and we know
beyond that.
And yeah, so the fact that it had stopped detecting these solar particles, so that's, you know, that's information that gets right. sent back mm. using this 40-year-old technology. How the hell they do it, I have utterly no idea. It's all nuclear powered and stuff like that. So eventually it's going to all of the instruments are gonna
die.
Yeah, they're gonna die. And in around about 40,000 years' time, then it will be closer to another star than it will be to the sun, which gives you some idea of the magnitude of space.
So was it always the plan, though, that it would stay and voyage
yes, around? Yes, indeed. And it's got, and it and its sister ship, Voyager 1, they've both got these gold records on them. So just in case it gets picked up by any sort of alien life or something like that. And so there's a variety of photos that are stored on there. There's some music that is stored on there. Much to my chagrin, the Beatles are not on there, for goodness sake. I mean, you've got Beethoven, aww. You've got Bach, the three Bs, the, you know. Sheesh. So that, they didn't make the cut, but Chuck Berry did. Yeah, anyway. So it is currently around about 18 billion kilometres away from the Earth, but it's actually travelled 30 billion kilometers in its time because it's busy sort of going around the planets and swinging off them and getting these gravitational speed ups and stuff. So
did it start with a specific course?
Yes.
And then did it kind of go off the course that
was set? No, this was always the plan.
Okay.
Just to let it go and go and go and basically see what happens. So, you know, someday it might be picked up by little green folk or whatever. I don't know. But
who did get to decide what was put in there?
That's a really good question. Mm. I know that Carl Sagan was one of them, a great astronomer. Gesundheit, goodness.
Bless you, person who sneezed in the other room. Someone also has just texted in saying 15 kilometres a second relative to what?
Oh, gosh, that's a really, really good question, actually.
Thank you, Paul, for texting in.
That's a very good question. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, that's the answer, cool.
Probably 15 kilometres a second away from us, I would imagine, would be, yeah.
What they're saying.
That,
right.
I think that would be what they're saying. Yeah.
Okay.
So, very good question.
Nice. Try to trip up Alan there. There we go. I like it. Okay, final story. We'll race through this one.
This is a
woman who's attempted a cleanse by drinking only soy sauce and a lot of it.
So if you see anything on the internet that says A, cleansing, or B, toxins, then keep the hell away from it, okay? So this poor lady decided to have a colon cleanse by drinking a litre of soy sauce. As you know, soy sauce is extraordinarily salty.
Yes.
That sounds really not appealing.
Indeed. Well, it sounds almost impossible to actually do, physically impossible, because normally you've got a gag reflex that's going to kick in if you've got something really, really salty like that.
Was it drinking a litre throughout the day, or was it sort of like...
I think it was pretty quick. I think it was sort of within an hour or something like that. But this came to light. Actually, this has just sort of made the news, but I have to say that I saw this a couple of weeks ago on a YouTube channel called Chubby Emu.
Are you telling us what you watch?
I actually recommend this. This is really good. This is a guy who is an emergency doctor over in the States, and he highlights very interesting cases of people coming to the emergency room and what actually happened to them.
What's the confidentiality kind of issues around that?
They don't identify the people, solely what the issue was and
what happened to them.
And so the problem with this was that apparently, you know, they read on the internet somewhere that you could cleanse your colon by drinking lots of soy sauce. the trouble with it being so salty is that it dehydrates all of your cells mm-hmm. because water flows from pure water to where salt is. And so if you've got all the salt in your body outside your cells, then all of the water inside your cells will flow through your cell walls and you'll dehydrate, and especially your brain cells, and that's just not good. So this poor lady ended up with irreversible brain damage because of this thing, which leads me to question, can somebody be held responsible for this? If they are advocating on the internet, in a free public forum, to do this,
for a very dangerous...
can they not be done with attempted murder?
Mm. Well, yes, you're...
You know, there's a
I'm
legal
not a lawyer.
Bloody, yeah, exactly. But, neither am I. But somebody, you know, if you're gonna advocate this, then if it all turns to crap,
surely there should be
then
some consequences.
Surely there should be.
Do we know if the woman or her family are pursuing?
No, we don't. Okay. Not to my knowledge, anyway. But he also outlined another really interesting case, which is a famous one in chemistry, of a chemistry professor that spilled a couple of drops of a mercury compound on her gloved hands. And ended up dying about 8 months later because of that.
I think we've talked about this.
Yeah, I think
we've talked about that on the show.
And he sort of outlined the whole thing there. And, you know, very, very interesting channel if you're interested in sort of interesting medical things.
Going to figure out that must be where you get your stories from. Everyone's got to go to Chubby Emu now and we won't listen to you.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Alan. We'll have you on next week for a little best of, a little wrap-up of... Science over 2018 or something.
Very good.
And Marcus could both come in.
Yes, no, I'll see if I can drag Marcus along. Yeah.
And will
we
see you both at the Christmas party tomorrow
That's
night?
Tomorrow, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, hell.
Yes.
Okay, better get my glad
put
rags
it in
on.
The diary. Mm.
Oof.
Gosh. All right, thank you, Alan.
Okay, see you guys.
That was Dear Science.